The following Bloodstream Media podcast is made possible by Tremo Pharmaceuticals and is intended for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. Please speak with medical professionals before making healthcare decisions.
We can mask it, we can disguise it, we can function beautifully, but it's still there.
You are afraid right now because you live with pain, and your fear is causing you to stop doing the things that you love.
It requires acceptance over and over again.
It's completely different when you have someone who empathizes and truly understands what you're going through.
My life has value. My life, even with pain, I am an integral part of society.
Do you remember the first time that you felt pain? I do. I was 3 years old and I had recently transferred from a junior crib to a big kid bed. I was so excited to be like everyone else in my family. I was no longer a baby. I was a big girl. I'd hop into my bed every night, line up my 10 to 15 to 20 stuffed animals, wish them all a good night, and fall into a deep, peaceful slumber. All was quiet and all was well. Until one night. Despite my tiny features and deepest slumbers, I had somehow managed to roll 3 feet to the left, plow through a mountain of stuffies, and fall for what seemed to be forever. I awoke abruptly to find myself on the floor, stunned and scared. I remember crying out for my parents, and it wasn't until they arrived that I noticed a shooting pain down my right arm. Thankfully, I was okay, and after some deep breaths, I managed to calm myself down and collect the stuffies who had also made the tumble. For weeks, though, I was afraid to sleep in my big kid bed. It was something I felt so proud of, and suddenly, I was afraid that I'd get hurt and feel pain again. Eventually, the fear subsided, and I was able to sleep peacefully with the 10 to 15 to, let's be honest, probably 20 stuffed animals. But this pattern of pain and fear would continue throughout my life. That experience of pain, whether it be physical or emotional, the subsequent fear that it might happen again, and yet somehow gathering the courage to continue on. Pain is personal. It can affect our daily lives, sometimes drastically, and yet somehow, we continue on. This season on the Pain Podcast, we hear stories from people who suffer from chronic pain, like Patrick Gaines, a Colorado native who suffered a spinal tumor that left him with chronic regional pain syndrome.
Then I woke up in the middle of the night, literally paralyzed from the neck down on the left side.
In this episode, Patrick opens up about his own personal journey with chronic pain, when it began, where it took him, and how it continues to influence his life today. He shares the ups and downs, the treatments, and the support systems that help him continue on. Patrick reminds us that carrying pain doesn't have to diminish the flame within. And although pain is extremely personal, know that you are not alone in this journey.
So in late 2013, I started feeling what I would call sort of a neck pinch or a nerve pinch. And like most people, just sort of ignored it or thought it would go away. And it was getting progressively worse. And it was a intense enough, pain where I would be almost temporarily disabled and then it would release and I'd feel better. April of 2014, then I woke up in the middle of the night one night, literally paralyzed from the neck down on the left side, dialed 911. And when I got to the ER and after they'd done all the CTs and MRI scans, it turned out to be a neck tumor. I'd lost feeling below the neck completely. That was a tumor that was successfully removed, but the trauma to the spine from the tumor itself and the surgery is what caused the lingering nerve pain. So I'd gone through intense physical rehab to learn to rewalk and use my limbs and dexterity and so forth, occupational therapy and physical therapy. The pain really didn't come on for about a month, month and a half after, which was perplexing to everyone. And, we just sort of do what we know how to do, and that's look at medications. So it was that began a series of medication experiments to try to address the pain. I feel I had a support system from medical providers, but I think they were looking through a very specific set of lenses, and that was you know, kind of a Western medical lens. And that lens is really about surgery, very rigorous interventions and medications. So it was supportive but narrow, I would say, from a medical standpoint. I was immediately asking questions of my team. Well, what's caused it? We're not really sure. Trauma to the spine. Okay, well, how long do you think it'll last? And they said, well, it's a nerve injury. Nerve injuries are very complicated. There is this thing called neuroplasticity. Nerves will repair themselves. That did happen. Some numbness was, you know, came back. But they said, look, nerves repair somewhere in the neighborhood of a millimeter a month, I think was the number they gave me. I'm about 6 feet tall. The injury was basically in my upper neck, brainstem. And they said 5 to 10 year span, and there's always the possibility that this is a lifelong condition.
Certain moments can change the trajectory of our lives. They often arrive abruptly, and we don't always know how to process them.
I would lose concentration driving, being in meetings, really almost any time. And I would describe it almost like a white noise in my head, or like the, you know, the cry of a baby in the distance, but then it just gets louder and louder and louder. And it would perplex me, and I started to realize that was the pain just sort of becoming unmanageable as the day went on. And I, you know, you push it down, push it down, push it down, and then it would just come back. And yeah, that would start to take a real toll, because then I would feel feelings of inadequacy, weakness, of I'm losing, you know, I'm on the downside of my life now. Those were some dark moments. Occupational therapy was very helpful in getting my dexterity back. I did have numbness in my hands and some proprioception issues, walking and running for maybe about a year, but that passed pretty quickly. So it felt like I was able to be more or less back to normal lifestyle within about 3 months, just carrying pain now. I'm a weekend warrior athlete, so I'm a long distance runner, and I take advantage of all the great things that Colorado has to offer: mountain climbing, hiking, running. So I turned to that, you know, just because it was what I was used to, and there's a euphoria that comes from rigorous exercise that and being outdoors that is somewhat comforting, but it was limiting. This is a nerve pain, so it's a burning sensation. So strength-wise, I never lost strength. I just, you know, carry pain all the time. It wasn't a moment, it was a series of moments. I'm divorced, and I was raising, at the time, my son is now 20 years old and off and living his life, but when this onset, I still had him at home part-time. When I was home alone, when he was with his mother, my body was so weakened by the day's activities, and I'd lost all my resilience. And now it was just nothing but me in pain by ourselves. And those dark, bewitching moments of the evening, that's where the drug use started to really pick up. So in addition to, oh my gosh, just there was no end of medications that my doctors were willing to throw at me. Maybe I look like a trustworthy, sane, rational person. They just never questioned whether or not I would abuse them, but I did. And so I was mixing street drugs and pharmacy medications. That went up until about summer of 2015, when I admitted myself into, at the pleading of family, admitted myself into the first of four rehabs that I went through. One of my care providers was a nurse practitioner in the pain clinic, and she was administering very heavy doses of ketamine, which was horrible. And after one of the ketamine treatments, which had no impact on the pain whatsoever, she was writing down a list of supplements that I could take. And she noticed in my blood that there was other drugs, and she goes, you know, that stuff you're taking isn't going to help, alcohol and other things. And I said, I know, but it's the only thing I know to mask it. She said, well, try to not do that. And as she was writing down, you know, supplements and vitamins and so on, she wrote down a book, and the book was Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach. There was something in that book, there was a line in that book, I don't remember the line, I grabbed a Sharpie pen and I wrote it on my wall, and that was the beginning. And then it became, you know, paint, and then it became gluing, you know, things to the wall like tiles and yarn. There was expressions of joy and pain and fear, art as a means of an outlet. So I turned my master bedroom into an art gallery with paint and, you know, textiles and glue and yarn and anything I could find. And I just, everything was my canvas, the wall, the floors, the ceiling. And some nights were therapeutic and some nights were just terrifying. I think that there was a propensity toward addictive behavior my whole life, and pain was the tipping point, if you will, that just pushed it into the stratosphere, or really the other direction, pushed it into, you know, the depths of hell.
We'll hear more from Patrick's journey right after a quick word about our sponsor.
The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and made possible thanks to our sponsor, Tremo Pharmaceuticals.
When I was a kid, I spent a summer dancing with the New York City Ballet.
This is Corey McGregor. She leads new products planning at Tremo.
I was fortunate in that my parents didn't push me to do things that that I didn't want to do anymore. And when it stopped being fun, I didn't want to do it anymore.
While Corey's ballet career may have been a short one, she has a pretty important role nowadays at Tremo.
My job basically requires me to look toward the future and think and plan for how the products that we're developing can be most helpful for patients with pain.
Corey's no stranger to the impact pain can have on a person's life either.
I was a runner in high school, and over time the heavy training did quite a bit of damage to my knee. You know, I eventually had to give up my dreams of running a marathon as a result. Just recently, I had what I'd say is probably the most significant flare that I've had in several years. And it was a good reminder for me just how consuming, you know, pain and discomfort can be. You know, quality of life can play a critical role in anybody's overall health. And, you know, it was just a good reminder that, you know, that the impact that pain can have on quality of life and pain and discomfort, it's hard to overstate.
Tremo was founded with the goal of developing and delivering non-opioid pain therapies for people with rare diseases and other carefully selected pain conditions. Tremo is currently conducting a phase 3 clinical trial for its lead product, a COX-2 selective NSAID. NSAID, for those who aren't familiar, stands for non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. While this treatment is not FDA approved, you can learn more about Tremo's pipeline, mission, and the dedicated team working alongside Corey by going to TremoRx.com. That's TremeaRx.com. Tremo, leading the way for those left behind in pain.
Finding motivation to move forward while experiencing pain can be hard and sometimes seem downright impossible. As Patrick's journey continues, you will hear about his daily motivations and support systems that help him to keep moving forward. One of the most important being his son.
He's the center of my universe. One memory that's burned into my heart and my soul that will never escape is when he came into the intensive care unit after my surgery was over, and I'm hooked up to wires and tubes and all kinds of machinery. He's like, oh my God, how can my dad be rendered, you know, completely powerless? And so that was the beginning for him. And so it was at that moment he realized dad's human. And then he saw a progression of intense struggles with depression and drug abuse. He was part of my rehabs. When I left for rehab, he was pretty upset with me, but he said to me in his young, profound wisdom, he said, you gotta stop doing this for me. You've gotta do it for yourself now, Dad, because there's, you know, I sort of don't care at this point, but if you can't do it for you, then there's no you to leave in love. So yeah, he's been a huge, huge part of it. He's really been a part of the full journey. The first rehab I went to was actually in San Rafael County, California, a tremendous, wonderful, wonderful clinic called Bayside Marin. And they introduced a daily routine of physical exercise, meditation, both somatic and spiritual meditation throughout the day. didn't stick. 2015 wasn't the rehab that worked. But Mel, I would say that yes, it was almost like it opened a new medicine cabinet to say, wow, there are other choices out there. I just didn't know they existed. Each place that I participated in rehab had some form of holistic, in fact, many forms of holistic healing. I would say all of them did, and they all did a great job. Something stuck after every one of them. And, you know, the fundamental truth is, the sort of fundamental idiom is still true, in my opinion, that, you know, until a person is really ready to fully admit the nature of their problem and commit to addressing it, things just won't stick. And so after this, in the summer of 2018, I was ready. I was broken, as they say. The last one I did added one more element, and that was equine therapy. And man, is that powerful. Oh my gosh, to start to build a relationship with a 1,200 pound creature is pretty extraordinary, and what you can learn from it is amazing, and a lot of healing went on with that. So I don't get to access that very much anymore, but that was beautiful. That was a beautiful new modality I had not seen before. If I've learned anything, there are some truly extraordinary Western medical physicians out there that do embrace more holistic practices. I'll tell you one story. So I was getting, this was back probably in 2016, and I was seeing a neurosurgeon, and he was reviewing my MRI scans. At this point, I just felt like I was on a, you know, medical mill. Rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. So here I was again in a clinic, being poked, being asked to stand up, bend over, you know, stand on one leg. And here was this little neurosurgeon looking at my scans, and then he'd look at me and look at my scans, and he turned off the computer and he said, "You are anatomically fine. There are no lesions. There's nothing in your body we can find to operate on, to medicate, but I also see where the trauma was, and I know you're in pain, and I'm really sorry." And he said to me, "Tell me about your life before this incident. Talk to me about where, you know, what was your life? What did you do?" So it got to that point of, I love running, I love being outdoors. And he said, "Okay, now we're on to something." He said, you are afraid right now because you live with pain, and your fear is causing you to stop doing the things that you love. I see the flame inside of you," which I thought took tremendous courage for a Western medicine doctor to say. But he said, "I see the flame inside of you, Patrick, but it is very dim because you're so afraid." And of course, he probably also knew I was masking it with drugs. He said, "It's time to build that flame back up and have the courage to go out and redo those things. Listen to your body, listen to your heart. Your body will tell you what it can and can't do, but you've got to push through. Because I'm telling you, physically, you won't break anything." And so that was kind of a turning point. It's, you know, one of Maslow's basic human needs, just to be seen every now and then. So for him to say, "I see you," means everything in the world. Yes, I'm in pain. Maybe this will be lifelong, but I can still take care of myself and be well. When you have a chronic problem like pain that it's just never lets you go, you sort of have a sense of doom, like, well, it's over and I'm just waiting to die, and that death may take a day or it may take 50 years, you know, I don't know. And so that was a turning point for me to say, invest every day in something that makes me well, helps me stay well.
Investing in one's own well-being can take many forms. Patrick shares some of his current daily practices that help manage pain and keep him moving forward.
So I do have a job. My working hours, I'm an empty nester now, and so I manage my own time, which is just phenomenal. But I'll typically work a typical 8-hour day, and that day starts either early and ends earlier, starts a little later, it ends late. So there's a big chunk of time in there, an 8, 7, 8, 9 hour chunk of time during a weekday where I'm working. And my work is not behind a computer, it's out meeting with clients, and I work for the Boys and Girls Clubs of America, so I get to be with kids a lot. And then I also have a daily meditation practice, both one that I sort of reserve almost prayer-like, where it's something I do in isolation to try to dedicate 20 minutes to an hour to do that. But I also meditate throughout the day, just because that's back to the medication. 5-10 minute meditations can be dosages of medicine that I now take that are effective in managing pain. So I don't run. I used to run 100-mile ultra marathons and even greater distances. I don't do that as much right now, but I do run every day and try to stay, you know, physically fit. It's just important to my general wellness, general well-being. There is some sort of serenity and wisdom I've picked up in that self-care routine and discipline over the last 7 years. It comes from not only the chronic pain, but learning to manage it. One metaphor I'd like to use is, you know, screaming into the wind. The drug use was like screaming into the wind. No one heard me and it got me nowhere. So to turn into the wind and flow with it and learn ways to do that is much more effective. I'm not an anti-drug guy. I'm not. I know I have very dear friends and family who are on medications for very serious chronic conditions, and their lives, it's all about quality of life, and their life quality is high because medications help them maintain a state of homeostasis that works for them. Totally on board with that. My journey right now is just one that is drug-free. I am still open to the possibility that down the road, because I hope to live another 50 years, that it could be, there are some drugs that get developed that could be useful. I've learned from a medical standpoint, pain exists. My and people like me who suffer from chronic pain that is inexplicable, the pain switch got turned on and they don't know how to turn it off. And so pain is just being used by my body incorrectly. So at some point I have to realize, well, this is my body and I gotta just talk to it. So that's what I've learned to do, is not look at pain as something I'm going to be rid of, because today it's almost like me saying, well, maybe one day I'll be rid of my right arm because I only need one, and two is, you know, abundant. Pain now is just part of who I am, and I have to talk to it, I have to address it.
Patrick's journey, though not over, is one of vulnerability, resilience, and courage. I am honored to have had the privilege to hear his story. And before we bid farewell to Patrick, I wanted to know one final misconception of pain he'd like to see dispelled.
I think one of the biggest misunderstandings of chronic pain is that it's a curse. Brené Brown says it so well that, you know, sympathy disconnects people. Oh, I'm so sorry you're cursed with that. I'm so sorry that happened to you. I'm so sorry you're in pain. It's not that I don't appreciate that, I do, but it immediately says I am different than you. In many ways, I'm a fuller person than I used to be because of pain. It's just that my choices are narrower because my bandwidth isn't as wide as it used to be, because pain governs some of that bandwidth. I'm going to borrow a phrase from 12-step recovery, which I am a part of, and that is that we don't give advice, but we share our experience and our strength and our hope. So I'll share my experience, strength, and hope. If you are living with chronic pain, my experience, strength, and hope is to not attempt to do it alone. It is my natural tendency to do it alone. I don't want to be seen as weak. I don't want to burden other people. I don't want to be not believed. I don't want to be run through the medical mill again. There's so many reasons that say I'll grit my teeth and I'll do this alone. My experience is that is a big, big mistake. So that's a natural segue to those who are not in pain. When we reach out to you, don't try to fix it. When we who are in pain share our story, anybody, just their natural tendency is, what can I do to fix it? So I think my experience, strength, and hope around that is to just say, when others listen to me, that's the real healing power, because I know that you have a part of my story. And that makes me stronger, just knowing, hey, there's other beautiful human beings out there that carry a little bit, and every now and then they're gonna think about that guy that they heard. Maybe they remember my name, maybe they just remember a piece of my story. I don't care. It's out there. And it's a piece of weight off of me that you and they now carry, and that's of great benefit to me. My name is Patrick Gaines, and I have a condition called chronic regional pain syndrome.
Each story starts somewhere. Next time, we explore pain beginnings on episode 2 of the Pain Podcast. The Pain Pod is written by me, Mel Forrest, produced and edited by Greg Holtzman, artwork by Ryan Gielen and Christina Newhard, post-production support from Joshua Sterling Bragg, Rob Bradford, and Avra Friedman, executive produced by Patrick James Lynch, and this episode was hosted by me, Mel Forrest. The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and presented by Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Learn more about Tremo and the work they're doing to help alleviate pain by visiting TREMEAURX.com. If you liked this episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and share the Pain Podcast. And thanks so much for listening. I'm Mel Forrest, and we'll be back next time with episode 2 of the Pain Pod.